This is an interview with a Belgian man named Thelis Knoll. The interviewer is Lee Krieger. Mr. Knoll is 85 years old. He was born in Roseau, Wisconsin in 1890. The interview took place in his living room at his house at 257 Bader Street in Green Bay, Wisconsin. The tape was made on Tuesday, December 9th, 1975. It was a pleasant day and it was snowing lightly. Mr. and Mrs. Knoll's parakeet can be heard chattering in the background. Okay, Mr. Knoll, could you tell me about when your grandparents first immigrated to America?
Well, my great-grandparents, Knoll, came from Namur, Belgium in 1856. And they bought land from the government at 50 cents an acre. They were allowed 80 acres. So my great-grandparents bought 80 acres for $40, and my grandfather bought 40 acres for $20. That is in Lincoln, Wisconsin, which is about 8 miles north of Casco.
Now, was this your grandparents on your mother's side or your father's side?
No, my grandparents on my dad's side.
What were their names?
Knoll. I mentioned the name Knoll.
Okay. And what about the bartering system that they first used when they came here?
Well, when I reached the age 10, my parents took me to the chapel at Robinsonville to make my first communion. And as payment for my schooling and religious education, there was one hog and 3 100-pound sacks of flour.
Why did they do this instead of using money?
There wasn't any money in the country at that time.
You cut it out.
No, that's okay. We can just go on.
Just leave it run.
Sure. About your schooling, could you tell me about your first days at school and what they were like?
Well, I don't recall the first days at school. But I do know that when I reached school age, my parents gave me a slate and a slate pencil and sent me to school. I didn't know one word of English. People around there at the stores and at the cheese factories and at church and everywhere else in the neighborhood all spoke Belgian. I never heard a word of English.
And so how did your teacher go about teaching you?
Well, I don't recall that, but teachers must have had a tough time. My teacher then was Judge Murphy's father, and a fellow by the name of Olson from Sturgeon Bay, and a fellow by the name of Barta, who later on sold hardware for Frankfurt Hardware Company.
Do you remember what your first books were like?
No, I don't.
They were all in English right away?
Oh, sure.
Could you tell me about something about the layout of the schoolhouse and how it was heated?
The school was all one room. When you came into the hallway, there were a lot of hooks there, and you hung your clothes there and put your dinner bucket on the floor. So you had a nice, cool dinner.
Yeah.
And the stove was over 4 feet long, and they put in 4-foot cordwood in it. And if your seat was alongside of the stove, you were burning on one side, and on the other side you were cold.
Could you tell me the story you told me before about the overalls?
When you recited class time, the classes were from 1 to 4, I guess, at that time. They didn't go to school 8 years then. That was a waste of time. They would stand up, the class that was reciting would stand up in front of the teacher's desk, and the teacher would ask the questions and they would recite.
Did they all talk together?
No, they'd call on each individual kid for an answer to a certain question, or a spell or something like that. Then they had spell downs too at those days. That was the indoor sport.
Did you ever win any?
I won one at the Green Bay Business College in 1908. That the extent of my schooling, I couldn't go any further. My dad wouldn't. I'm the oldest of seven children.
Yeah.
And I made the seventh and eighth grade in 1 year, but then when it come to high school, my dad said he couldn't spare me. So yeah. I went to work in the candy factory for $4 a week, 60-hour a week, too, not 40 hours 60. Like today. $4 a week.
Which candy factory was that?
Brenner Gazette Candy Company. The building still stands next to the Brown County Motors.
Could you tell me that story again about the boys with their overalls in the winter by the stove?
Oh, that was in school. Everybody wore overalls. Most of them did. And when they'd be wet and they'd sit near that stove in the center of the schoolhouse, they would smell.
Did that happen real often in the winter?
Well, you get out in the snow and you were wet.
Yeah.
When you come in, you were wet.
Who were most of the teachers in the schools? Were they women or men, or did you have nuns or?
No, it was public school. Mm. Of course, there were parochial schools before there were public schools. Same with the population. The churches had what do they call that?
Parochial schools?
No, the number of population.
I'm not sure.
Oh, they take that every 10 years.
Oh, a census.
The census. The church had census. The churches had census before the government did. I used to, when I was at the bank here, and a lot of the people during World War II would drive to Sturgeon Bay to work at the shipyards, and they would always demand their birth certificate. Well, there's only one place to get it, especially among the Catholic churches out there in the Belgian territory. The church had all the census.
And where
all
you?
There, they could get their birth certificates right there.
Do you think the churches still have those old censuses?
Oh, yes. I got mine there. I got a lot of them. Get any of them you want.
Yeah.
That's in the Belgian territory, I know, held true.
Yeah.
I sent a lot of them there to the church where they were baptized, and the priest would give them a birth certificate, copy of the birth certificate.
You mentioned something before that most of the teachers that you had were pre-medical students.
Yes, Judge Murphy's father was one of our school teachers, and well, he saved his pennies, I suppose, from teaching, and then went on to medical school 2, 3, 4 years and became a doctor, an M.D. Mm. Today, you have to go about 8, 10 years.
Yeah. What kind of pay did he get teaching?
About $20, $30 to $40. $20, $30 at that time.
A month?
Yeah.
So he probably had to save for a while. You said you brought your sack lunch to school. Does that mean you never went home for lunch?
Oh, no. A mile and three quarters through the snow, you couldn't go home at noon.
Did I hear you say something?
Oh, we can get you on there.
About medical?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, fellas, tell them about the time you got the big gash in your leg, what they did for it.
Oh, that is an instance when the thrashing crew was pulling into our yard to thrash our grain, and I was watching the cattle. We had no fences. I was watching the cattle, except this one fence we had. It was a rail fence, and I used to walk that like a squirrel, and I fell off from it, and there was one nail in the whole fence, and I struck it.
Ooh.
And I got a gash in my leg, and one of the women that come in with the thrash crew, she filled that big hole full of lard and tied her red handkerchief around it, her red thrashing handkerchief.
Oh,
I was only about 6 or 7 years old.
Six or seven. Well, no wonder you were walking on the fence instead of working. Was that an old Belgian remedy, or did she just think of it on the spur of the moment?
I don't know. I guess she just to pacify me, and I went back to watching the cattle.
Oh. Oh, you were going to tell me about how, the distance you had to walk from school and how you got there in the middle of winter and stuff.
During the winter time, the school was, we'd have to walk three quarters of a mile east, then three quarters of a mile north. So we used to cut kitty corner over from our house to the schoolhouse, cut down our distance. And in those days, the snow was, we had a lot more snow than we have nowadays, and no snow plows either. But the weather would form a crust on the snow, and the snow would support us. So we'd walk right on top of the snow, over the fence posts and everything. Rail fences were all covered.
That was clever. Then you didn't get so wet.
No. And there were no rubbers those days either.
Oh.
So at night when you got home from school and did your barn work, then my mother would grease our shoes. She would warm them near the stove so they'd dry, and the next morning she'd grease them with lard so that the snow wouldn't soak through our shoes so fast.
Yeah, that was a good idea.
At least we had shoes them days. My dad had wooden shoes, and he would make a sort of a sock and tack it on the top of the wooden shoe, and then tie that kind of a sock that he'd made from denim. Mm. He would tie that above his knee. That way he didn't get any snow in his shoes, in his wooden shoes.
Is that while he was working in the farm?
That's when he was going to school.
Oh.
His school is still up, too, in Lincoln.
Huh.
About a half mile east of the Lincoln Church.
Hmm. Was school pretty much the same in his day as it was in yours?
Oh, I imagine so. You went 3-4 years when they didn't need you to help out on the farm.
Yeah. I suppose that was when he was real young, but they didn't need him. What about some of the children who had to work on the farm during the school year? Did they get excused?
I don't remember the excuse that they required, but during potato picking time, all the kids stayed home a few days to pick potatoes. You know, you didn't go to the store and buy potatoes those days. You grew them. If you didn't grow them, you didn't have them. So there was always 2-3 days of a few days of picking potatoes. That was a dreaded job.
It was
cold always in the fall, you know.
What time of year was that?
September, October, I guess mostly.
Hmm. Were you excused for that too, or was this
sure.
a few kids?
Oh, sure. The teachers expected. That the parents would ask for an excuse. Oh, they'd be excused for every little thing. That's why their education was so limited. They missed so much, you know. You miss a few days in school and you're lost.
Yeah. Especially if you don't know how to speak English.
Yeah.
They must have spent the first few years of school just teaching you how to speak English before they could start on other things.
Well, I don't remember that because I was only 6 or 7 years old, and I know we were given a slate and a slate pencil and sent to school, but I don't know how we picked up the English.
Must have been frustrating.
I wonder today why our parents didn't start us.
Yeah. Could your parents speak English?
Oh, sure. They had gone through the 4th grade.
Yeah.
My folks are good penmen.
You mentioned before that at some of the public schools they had nuns teaching instead of regular lay teachers in some other communities.
Oh, that is the town of Eaton. The township was 100% Catholic. That's just southeast of Green Bay here, town of Poland, or town of Eaton, they call it. And the school properties were joined, the Catholic school property and the public school properties joined. So when they wanted teachers, they got nuns and put them in the public school. They were cheaper.
Wow, how much did they work for?
$1 a day.
Wow.
It's all a nun got. Lately they've been getting a little more.
So that was probably only about $20 a month then. Or something like that.
was 20 or 30, I don't know, but it was a dollar a day is what nuns work for. I don't know if they paid him according to the working days or paid him right straight through the month for each day. I don't recall it.
Yeah.
I never was treasurer in schools. I was on the county school committee when it started for this getting rid of these small one-room schoolhouses. I was on the county school committee for several years.
For which county was that?
Brown County.
Oh. Huh. What year was that that began?
Gee, I don't remember. The old superintendent that I was with, still living, it's Joe Donovan.
Hmm. Do you remember any more stories you'd like to tell me about your school days? Just before we go on?
Well, I was the first one of my folks' family. I'm the oldest of seven. So I stayed at my grandmother Brandt's and went to that school, which was only about a half mile away from the house, instead of walking me a mile and a half to our school. But you had to have a little guardian angel, because the kids there knew at that school knew you were a stranger there, and they'd pick on you.
Oh, what did they do?
Well, then my grandma Brandt's neighbor, Emil Nazi, he always protected me.
Was he an older boy?
Yeah, he lived right across from my grandmother's. Oh. And the rest of the kids knew him.
How long did you go to that school?
Just one season.
Hmm. Was that your last season of schooling, or was that...
No, that was my first.
Oh, I see. That was because you were younger, I suppose.
Yeah, and I had to go to school alone. I guess the year after, then my brother was able to go with me.
Oh, yeah. Hmm.
And we went to our own school.
Well, if that's it for the schooling, I'd like to ask you about the Belgian band in Rosier.
Oh, yes, they always had a Belgian band there. It's composed mostly of the Andry family, in which family my mother's sister married. She married Fred Andry. He was a violin player. Peter was the organ player and the trumpet player, and Joe was a clarinet player. And old Depa, D-E-P-A-S, his name was, he played the tuba. And my uncle Joe Brandt's played drums. They've always had a pretty good Belgian band there.
Hmm. Could you tell me what sort of things they, music they played? And?
Oh, no, there were waltzes and two-steps.
Hmm.
That's all I danced to in my days.
What sort of occasions did they play for?
Well, you only had three or four dances a year. You had Pentecost was one dance, and Easter was another, and their Kermis. But their Kermis lasted 3 days. It started on Monday after the 10 o'clock Mass. That is for everybody. On Monday, I guess, was for the elderly people and the young people, and on Tuesday was for the young people.
Oh, and did they dance all those 3 days?
Oh, yes, and drank beer, too, and a lot of it, and ate Belgian pies, too.
Oh.
My grandmother Brandt used to make 110 Belgian pies for the Kermis, a lot of rolls and bread, baked in an outside oven, stone oven.
Yeah. Huh. Where were the dances held? Were they outside or inside? Or?
Dance halls are still up there. The one at Rosaire is Rubens Hall, and it's still up there.
Hmm.
And the one at Lincoln, there was a dance hall above my grandfolks Noel's living quarters and store and tavern. They were all on one floor. The living quarters and the store and the tavern were on the on the first floor, and the dance floor was on second floor.
Huh.
And each one of my grandparents had a cheese factory, too, and a store.
During the Kermis, did they usually party all day and all night, or did they go home to bed?
Oh, they had a rest. Slept late, I suppose.
Oh. Do you remember going from town to town for the kermis?
No. We just went to the Grandma Brant's kermis in Rosaire. Mm. My grandfolks lived about, I don't recall whether it's 5 or 6 miles away. And we didn't go to that kermis.
Hmm. Do you did you have relatives come for your kermis?
Well, the relatives and friends from Brussels and Lincoln, Sloven, all those surrounding towns came to the Rosaire kermis. And then when it was kermis at Lincoln, well, then the people from Brussels and Rosaire and all those other places went to Lincoln. That's why they had to have so many pies.
Did they eat 100 pies in 3 days usually?
Well, if you went to visit there, you had to eat a piece of pie and drink a cup of coffee. You just couldn't get out of it.
There must have been a lot of people around to eat that many pies.
Well, they had a variety of them, too. They had raisin pie, then they had prune pie without cottage cheese, and prune pie with cottage cheese, apple pie without cottage cheese, and apple pie with cottage cheese, and even rice pie.
Wow.
That is my dad's favorite, rice pie. I never could...
Oh, which is your favorite?
I was like the apple and cheese.
Sounds good.
It is good.
Yeah. Could you tell me about the time that your grandfather was riding back from the kermis during the fire?
That is during that fire. He was visiting his buddy from the army, a fellow by the name of Delphos. They were buddies in the army. And it was the kermis at Rosaire, where Delphos lived. Mm-hmm. And the two of them would get together then, having been buddies in the army, and would get drunk on the kermis in Rosaire. Then when it was kermis time in Lincoln, then Delphos would go and visit my grandfather and get drunk there. But this happened on the kermis at Rosaire that the fire came. And Delphos gave my dad and my grandfather, some milk cans full of water so he could douse himself every once in a while. And when he got to the swamp about a mile back of their farm, he unhitched the horses and left them run in the field, let them protect themselves as best they could. They thought, well, if they're going to burn, might as well burn the field as burning the barn. But that night the rain came and the fire was out and the horses were back at the barn door to get in.
Well, that was nice. So the fire never reached your grandfather's farm at all. That was lucky.
No, it burned mostly in Brussels and Rosaire. Yeah. I remember the large cedar trees were maybe 2 feet in diameter, and they were all burnt. The inside was all burned out. All that was left is a shell. I remember those in our woods.
Okay, if you want to tell me a little bit more about the kermis, you can. Otherwise, we'll go on. Is there anything more you can think of about the kermis that we missed?
Oh, no. Everybody got drunk. That's all. They ate too much. That's all.
Yeah.
But that's the one time of the year when they had fresh meat, you see.
Oh, what did they have?
Well, there was no ice boxes, no refrigerators at that time, so you couldn't keep meat.
Yeah.
During the Cleveland administration, too, where times were tough, that's when my dad just went into farming. Otherwise, my dad was a cheesemaker. He was one of the early cheesemakers. He and his brothers in Lincoln. Then he went to Rosaire to teach my mother's 3 brothers how to make cheese. And that's where he met my mother. And he made cheese at Rubens's in Rosaire for years. And then go and do his farm work after cheesemaking time. Then he worked for Pierre Verlie making cheese too in Brussels. That is 3 miles from our farm. Old times weren't very nice.
he'd haul hay across Green Bay from Little Sturgeon to Menominee, Michigan, to make an extra buck or two of a trip, I suppose. He did that for the Jigots, G-I-G-O-T-S. Then that hay was picked up at Menominee, Michigan by all the lumber firms, you know, to haul it up in the woods to lumber. Lumbering was then the growing thing at that time.
Oh, what did they use the hay for at a lumber camp?
Well, the horses.
Oh, yeah.
You had no tractors them times.
Yeah.
Well, it was different times than now. There were no tractors, no snow plows. There wasn't any. You had kerosene lamp. You almost had a light a candle in order to find the lantern, you know. They didn't give off much light. And the kerosene lamps in the house, you wonder why if we still have any eyesight from trying to do your homework.
Really?
And we still have kerosene lights when I was trying to learn to play the violin, and that isn't easy.
I can imagine, because you had to go to school all day or work all day, and then you didn't have time to practice till night.
Try a kerosene lamp sometime, see how little light you have.
Yeah, I guess I will, just to find out. What kind of meat did you have at the kermis?
Well, my dad would kill a cow on a thrash floor, and all the neighbors would come and get a chunk. They didn't weigh it. They just took 20, 30 pounds, whatever they need.
Did they buy it, or did your father just give it to them?
No, a cow during Cleveland's times, you could only get $8 for a cow. Today you got $400, $500, $600.
So was that the only time you had beef?
And the farmers today say times are tough, they're losing money. Just the same, farms today are selling. At that time, I think my dad sold his 80 acres and a new house and everything for $3,200. Today, I know farmers that, I know one farmer has had a $180,000 mortgage. Boy, they're paying no less than 500 an acre today.
Yeah.
Well, it's different today.
Yeah, I'd say.
Them days it was hard work on the field too. You had a binder and hay mower, you made shocks from the hay. You raked it first, then you made shocks. And if it rained and wet your shocks, then you'd have to spread all those shocks all over the whole field. Then after it dried, you make shocks again. But if it rained again, you had to go over the same thing again. And it was the same thing with the grain. You had shocks, they call it, and there was 10 bundles in each shock. And if it rained on it, well, then you threw those shocks apart so that they dry, the grain would dry up.
Yeah, what did they call those stacks of grain?
Shocks.
Shocks?
Yeah.
I thought you mentioned something before about calling them a disa or a...
Well, that's in Belgium. They call it a dija.
Dija.
That's a dish, that's 10.
Huh. Is that
so that would be 10 bundles. Yeah, that's Walloon.
Huh. That gets right into what I was going to talk about next, which is farm life. And could you tell me about the tradition of passing the land on that was among Belgians?
Well, that is usually to the sons. They had a habit of giving everything to the sons. The girls had to find somebody that had a farm, I guess.
No.
Sure, all in my grandfather Brance's family, there were two girls and two boys. Three boys, but one died when he was 21. And the one boy got 120 acres all equipped, and he had to pay my mother $700 only. And the other boy got another 120 acres, and he had to pay my aunt $700. They favored the boys.
So if there were a lot of boys in the family, did they divide up the land equally among them?
No, usually the one who kept the parents. See, we had no convalescent homes at that time.
Yeah.
if the farm was given to one of the boys, well, he kept the parents and kept took care of their medical necessities and their funeral expenses. That's, the old parents lived with that one boy.
Yeah.
For the farm.
How did the farmers tend to get 150 or 300 acres of land when they started out with only 40, when the immigrants started out with only 40?
Well, people got to moving to the city. They'd leave the farms. I know in our neighborhood, after we left, Barrows left, DeWitt's left, Bazine's left, and the farm prices got up a little higher, and so they thought they were making money. Years ago, you didn't have to have $100,000 in order to retire. You had just a few thousand dollars, you could retire. Even when I was married, I only paid $7 or $8 a month in 1916 for house rent.
Oh,
today is $200-$300 a month for house rent.
Sure is. Could you tell me about when you started working on the farm when you were a boy and the things you did?
Oh, on the farm, you started working early. I remember that by the time I was taken to the chapel to make my first communion, I was 10 years old, and I remember I had cleaned cow barns 2 years already.
Hmm. Was that real heavy work?
Well, cow things, you know, pretty heavy.
Yeah.
When they're froze, and the barns were cold. They were log barns.
Did they have little children like that working out in the fields, too?
Whenever you could walk, there was some type of work you could do. Huh. And the wood you had to haul in, arms full. You carried all you could, as big a load as you could, so that you wouldn't have to make so many trips.
Hmm. Did the girls do farm work at all?
No, they were too young when we sold out, when my folks sold out.
You talked before about stacking the bundles of 10 bundles of grain. Did you do that when you were 8 years old, or was that too hard for a little boy?
I know that I helped, but I didn't do too much of it.
Hey, could you tell me about the milk prices back then?
Well, you got 40 cents a hundred for milk in the 1890s. And they wouldn't even take it on Sundays. So each farmer had milk cans and crocks, and he'd keep Sunday's milk, the two milkings, let the cream rise to the top, and then make butter from that. That's what we got our butter from.
Mm.
So again, you didn't have to buy butter. But if you had a surplus of butter, you could sell it. I remember one time we went, of course, my grand folks, Branson and Rosaire, having a store and cheese factory, and my grand folks, Noel and Lincoln, having a store and cheese factory. We'd have to trade with both of them. So one week we'd go to the one store, and the next week we'd go to the other. And I remember one winter, my mother had some butter to spare, and she took it along to Grandma Noel's store, and she had quite a few pails full of eggs. And when we arrived, the first thing my mother asked is how much butter was and how much eggs were. And butter was 11 cents and eggs were 8 cents. And my mother started to cry.
Can we stop? We got to stop